qaqa kumkuni unnaamiqstaamerit millugwaaniqa a unaaniqusqoqviim a illooni a neqittiqaillun ayoqqutsiitnak alaanillu a ariani a taim report anikniichi qukuk alaanqartoqwaani a huakin coastal villages regional fisheries or whatever how it's called, but Joaquin Liu, you're from the state, right?
I'm from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Okay. Dog and Jali King Unlim Kamani Liu Mati Taima Ilak Era Kun Fona Kun Ilagao Suni Pichikoka. Introduce yourselves, where you work and where you're from, maybe starting with you, Tris.
Sure. Koyana Sam. Good afternoon. My name is Tris Vicente. I work with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission.
Oh, there you go.
Here in Bethel, Koyana.
Mm-hmm. And Sam?
And I'm Sam Decker. I'm with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I am the Kuskokwim Area Fisheries Management Biologist.
Mm-hmm. Emmett, are you online?
Yes. Baka Kwinga Imatago, Emmett Nikrai.
Okay.
I'm the Refuge Information Technician with the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge.
Kuihlum Kingun Rilun, right?
No, Napare Hakmi.
Oh, Napare Hakmi.
We Katun, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nanga with Hutin Eden. Yeah, Huinga, Achira Rarunga, Makanum Trishanak. Bawanitagam Akulmiucht Hunga, Kasikilumi, Angli Lotamani. Oya Wikluki Ukut Unomk. Onani Kuskokfi Milani, Asani Lu Districtani. Nagtakaylunay ako chit nagnitlimt ni Elbert Emmet Jamk ka ayak ni rihutut ng kakam kunun nitlachtamt nun Jamk ka kanaksaytut ikihtlakat niklu atam
Ya, kwani kwa iking kauk atakusu umuklu ni 7 o'clock this evening. So it's Asaka Humuk, July 1 Namu, Spencer Raiden up, release Ashok, Asaka Humuk announcement Amuk, Jali Pitu Gachikut, July 7 from 7 a.m. to July 8, 7 p.m. for 36 hours, and set gill nets are restricted to set 6-inch or less mesh and may not exceed 45 meshes in depth. And we have a new fish recording line for our refuge, and the phone line for the recorded line is 907-543-3151. And to speak with someone at our office, the number is 907-302-5144. Again, our fish recording line is 907-543-3151. And to speak with someone at our office, the number is
907-302-5144. And I have Trish here with a bunch of papers with a lot of numbers. Can you enlighten us a little bit on what you want to talk about a little bit? And we can probably elaborate with people, callers.
Sure, yeah, and I hope callers call us.
Yeah,
it's good to talk with people. So thanks for the reminder. This is a call-in show.
Mm-hmm.
What I have in front of me, and Koyana Chakrak to Emmett for sharing about the upcoming SetNet opportunity they just announced for Next Monday, July 7 at 7 a.m. till Tuesday, July 8 at 7 p.m. For the mouth of the Kuskokwim to the Kalskag line. What I have in front of me, just to help me remember, are our harvest estimates in the lower Kuskokwim between Tuntutuliak to Tuluksak this year. So these are from all the federally announced drift and set gill net opportunities. They don't include any harvests, you know, below Tunt, above Tuluksak, or with non-gill net gear like dip nets or fish wheels. I know some people been using those throughout the river, but we at the Fish Commission, with our partners at Ohosahakamute Traditional Native Council and Fish and Wildlife Service, estimate that through this past Sunday, June 29th, so through the last set net opportunity over the weekend, folks between Tunt and Tuluksak have harvested a little over 34,000 king salmon, close to 20,000 chum salmon, and a little over 28,000 sockeye salmon. And looking at, you know, recent past years, these harvests are really actually pretty good, especially for king salmon. Chum salmon is higher as well, and we're just happy people are continuing to get those good, abundant, yummy red salmon too. So our co-management team with our tribal in-season managers and Yukon Delta Refuges fisheries management team that Emmett's on, they have a meeting next, Emmett, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's next Thursday, July 10th, to continue to assess the health of the runs and
yes,
okay,
correct. We'll be meeting on that day to decide if we should have any further opportunities based off the data.
Drift. I'm voting for drift. I got a brand new net I just hung. Where are you? Sam, do you have anything to add or bring up?
Sure, I can.
People would like to hear about good news, maybe.
I have just some information about the fishing that's happening in subsistence sections 4 and 5, which is upriver from Aniak. If we have any listeners from up in that area, fishing
I'm sure we do.
Fishing is open 24/7 with the 6-inch mesh, 25 fathoms, and down in the Good News Bay and Quinnahock areas. Those areas are also open. I need to check my date here. It is the 3rd of July. So in the Good News River, fishing is open 24/7. And in the Kinnectuck River, fishing is open except for Sundays. Fishing is closed on Sundays, and Monday through Saturday, when you're fishing, you can only have one net per boat. And that goes until the 15th of July.
And that's a full gear, 300.
Yes, yeah. Full shackle.
Yes.
Yeah. And the runs in those areas are going very well. We've heard really good things about harvest from folks, and I was able to take our new assistant area management biologist out to Quinnahock and Good News Bay. Now, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. We went out there and we spent 3 days in each community and got to walk around and visit folks and have a public meeting in Quinnahock, which was really good. We got to go up the Kinnectuck River, which was super interesting to see. It really helps you to understand what the site looks like. So, yeah. And then last week, I was just able to get up to Aniak and was able to go up, spend, again, 3 days, go up the Aniak River. It was super interesting to see that area from the river view. I flew over it last year doing the aerial surveys, but definitely got a lot more information being on the river.
Mm-hmm. While I was coming here to host the show, I saw a couple of jumpers. That means when my dad saw those when I was a boy, he used to tell me that there's going to be a lot of fish, or there is a lot of fish.
There are a lot of fish. Sonar just yesterday had a really high count of sockeye going by, over 40,000 fish in one day. Mm. So the sockeye are here.
Wow. It's a positive thing for everybody. We were kind of afraid with the water this low, minimum snow on the ground, that it wouldn't be like this. But hey, we don't know what's going to be coming up that river. I have something that I want to throw something at you two and also to Emmett. Medicine and Stevens Act. Mm-hmm. You heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
They're urging people in the villages to write to the one of the governor. Begich.
Mm.
And to encourage that act to be reenacted. In the house, see if it can be put back into, what would be the right word for it? Reenact or something like that. Reintroduce it, because they went out of it.
Reauthorize, I think, is the word you're looking for.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what? Do you think of that? Let me throw the numbers out to our listeners here before we get anywhere. Ukut numberat kaya gagulugi cham kapitung kakufji ukutung itnun asanama 907-543-5985 1-800-995-8954. Email agluji lupyukufji radio at kyuk.org. Takut doi lainat. Akut awai kanut kshita mani ikicht kata kluni atam unom giking kauk. Chamae aptu kakaluta. Girus ngashuku 36 hours. Ataku 7 o'clock time. Ataku tam kingoni kakauluni toi kihtah kausiniluni awakanutka July 7. Just another setnet opportunity. Piunakujim kchikiumaluta chalitoni chibing akaluting 36 hours. July 8 tak tiki ataku me. Toni ugakauluting chali. Kuyuh shooting, kuyuh kata kaluting away, emetak pisak mini, kuyuh kata, ten nami pisit, kuyuh kata kaluting, chali, ikichukatachikanik, unum kuskokfim iloni, naksukuluta pisakamtnik, toi hui vota korlukoyak lawai, driftas kumayak suki, nutaram kuviam kumishama. That last opener, drift opener, I got a barge. I got struck by a barge. And I'm happy that with the decision that was made that they replaced my net because there was two holes, huge holes on the net. The lines were good, you know, that my top line, my cork line, they were good, but the net was shot. So,
oh my goodness!
I just got done hanging a new net to replace it, and I thank the guys that there was no argument, no disagreements going on, so I was happy about that. It was unfortunate that I lost fishing time, but
yeah.
But I got something that we hardly ever catch, a barge. You know.
It must have been hard work pulling in that barge.
It pulled me in. But anyway, give us a call. Akuniawai Namperani, Unashawai, Achale Pishmine, Changtaputmane, Ashakuni, Akuni Plusrine, Changtasput, Mae Amsnrochpakluting, Changtaput, Achak. Makutakchakluting takayakpit unai kakiat sayit chatlu kangitnrit unai tutut taishimni khato angyakhalo ukhtlhignik malrugunik nakkignik tangshunga tot namma tanghakamiya khattairutfut Nilugu, quick pillar hook. A jolly shoe, Sam Kawai Pilchmini. Kawani, Gek and Anyaram, get into the headwaters. Ikin Kanilugu, Tamani, Nuxuluting, Kubian Katuhuk, Atuhuk, Atuhuk, Atuhuluting. 24/7 tamani king kaluni awal chali ukuni kut news koi na hak kanik dok tamani chali pilrit chali ki ruchi maluting doni kanik tu mi pilyuk agayun kami king an umgoma kakluni that one day Sunday is the closure for kanik We have a caller from here in Bethel. Jeff, good afternoon.
Hi, Sam.
Yeah.
I had a question probably for the scientists among you. I've noticed that we have a number of traditional enumeration sites, mostly weirs. In fact, I think entirely weirs now. I used to work on a counting tower years ago, but that's ancient technology. That's like going to the hospital requiring leeches, requesting leeches. So I know it's all gone over to weirs. And I can't see that any of them are operational, except for George River and Takotna. Is that in any way compromising the department and the service's ability to manage the fishery?
Well, thank you for the question. This is Sam Decker with the Department of Fish and Game. We've got crews that are out right now that are working to put in the rest of the weirs. Our weirs are run by a variety of different partner agencies. We do also have the ENIAC test fish and the Bethel or the Kuskokwim River sonar, and we'll be doing aerial surveys later in July. So our assistant area management biologist, Madison, is actually out flying right now, going over the Kinnectuck River. And so we have a variety of projects that we use to count the fish that are in the river. The Gweethluk weir is a Fish and Wildlife Service project that was not put in this year. The George is running. The COG has just started. The crew got out there just a couple of days ago, and they're working to get everything into place. We're also working on the Tatlawiksuk. Some of these weirs are very high up, and the fish essentially haven't reached those points yet. So we're pretty much on a regular schedule for when we're getting those projects in. But if you go to our fish counts website on the state of Alaska, if you Google, you know, ADF&G fish counts.
Yeah, I've been doing that.
Yeah, you'll see all the different weir projects there, and you'll be getting the updates.
Yeah, that's why I'm calling you. I'm seeing the weir projects, and they're not operational.
Yep, not yet.
Is the decision to put these in later, is that driven by, say, high water conditions, or is it driven by budget constraints? What's driving the decision to do this differently than in the past?
Budgets are a big part of the conversation this year. Like I said, a lot of our weirs are our partner projects, and the OSM funding caused a lot of changes to our methods and our strategies. We were hoping, for example, our sonar camp had a big move. They moved the entire sonar camp. Not the sonar itself, that's still at the same location. But if you're driving past the sonar location, you'll notice that the camp has moved about half a mile upriver onto a different island. And that is to have a more comfortable and stable camp. The last camp was having a lot of erosion issues, and our folks were prevented from putting in the sonar for, you know, during times of high water in the springtime, when the ice going out was late or when there was flooding. And so this is going to allow a more even operation of the Cusco sonar.
We could probably, I guess you're saying that this hasn't compromised apportionment at all?
No. They're still fishing in the same areas. So the apportionment is still going as it always has for the last 10 years.
I usually don't like to ask more than one question, but
I'll waive
my own policy. In terms of apportionment, et cetera, it seems like you guys can apportion more accurately, can be more confident than I can with my own insights and my own fishing, because it's such a small window and such a small amount of data. But it sure seemed like in this year's two drift openings that we had, I saw a lot more five-year-old kings than, and of course I don't have the ability to analyze their scales. I'm just going by size and weight, and the fact that a lot of them are females. It seemed like I saw a lot more five-year-olds than what I normally do. It was that consistent with what, you know, your crew on the sonar was seeing?
So we haven't had a chance to press the scales yet and to read the scales. We'll be doing that later in August and September. But we have been hearing from fishermen across the area that the king salmon are bigger than they've been in a while. Mm-hmm. And there's two ways that fish get bigger. One is there's just more food, and two is they stay out in the ocean for more years. Back
right.
in the 80s and 90s, when the fish were really big, we were seeing a lot of 8-year-old fish. And those fish have all but gone away now. The main portion of these fish are 4 and 5-year-olds. So it is good news to hear that you're seeing bigger fish this year. And that's consistent with what we've been hearing from subsistence fishermen across the area. Even up in McGrath, they're reporting larger fish, which is very good news.
As a fisherman, I didn't think that I was seeing very many 6-year-olds, only based on their size. And I didn't see a lot of fish, big fish hit the net and then lose them, which is common with the smaller gear. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, in the past, we used to look at age classes, and a strong showing of one age class generally affected management decisions and affected through forecasts. You know, if you saw a lot of fives, you would assume that next year you'd see a lot of sixes.
Correct, yeah.
With all the different stresses that take place where, you know, we no longer have a bell-shaped curve for our run, it would be one small indicator. Is that still a viable prediction? I mean, can we be optimistic next year that we should see more sixes based on the strength of the fives, if in fact that's what's happened?
Well, that's one of the reasons why we take scales every year, is to understand that's what we call the sibling relationship, fish that are born in the same parent year. You know, and then when we see, but what we're seeing with this change in age structure is a proportion of 4-year-olds, a proportion of 5-year-olds, and a proportion of 6-year-olds. So what we would expect to see next year with the king salmon, since we've done the work to have this relationship defined, what we would expect to see would be the number of kings, the number of 6-year-old kings, meeting the proportion of the ratio that we're expecting to see. I'm not sure what that is off the top of my head. I'm looking at my pile of paperwork and wondering if I brought it with me.
This could be anecdotal and speculative, and it would satisfy my query.
Let me see. I know that we put it in our first working group packet. We put the sibling relationship from last year. The question is, did I bring it with?
While she's looking through and trying to find that information, do you have anything to add there, Trish, to what's being thrown at you two?
Yeah, this is Therese Vicente with Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for all the questions.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I think I'd echo what Sam said, that a lot of the weirs are still getting installed. The Guithook River Weir, which Fish and Wildlife Service runs in partnership with the Organized Village of Guithook Tribe and our Intertribal Fish Commission, we did not install that this year because of numerous factors, including budgets and certainly, or I guess the uncertainty with federal funding right now that's going on, and uncertainty with federal capacity and personnel staffing. So, however, because we've seen more uncertainty with weirs in recent years, given changing climate conditions, shrinking budgets, our Fish Commission is starting to look at alternative ways to monitor salmon escapements, or I guess spawner abundance, up in our tributaries. So we've been working with University of Alaska Fairbanks, Fish and Game, some of our tribes and Fish and Wildlife Service to implement environmental DNA or eDNA sampling at a number of our weir sites across the rivers over the last several years to see if we can take water samples and analyze the salmon DNA in the water to indicate how abundant the fish are in line with the weir counts. Last year, we explored using a drone to basically do somewhat of an aerial survey over the Guithook River, just at a lower level, so hopefully it could see the fish more accurately and count them better. And so we're still in the process of analyzing that. And our drone guy, so to speak, Dr. Danny Auerbach, is exploring in the next couple weeks using autonomous camera systems to basically record fish passage up the Salmon Aniak River near the weir there that the native village of Nabaimut installs. So we're hoping to have a camera system set up to get photo and video of fish passing through the streams and have that be, you know, resilient against weather conditions and water conditions. And then Danny and his lab at Washington State University are actually training some deep learning or AI models to be able to count salmon from those videos. They have real people, you know, doing the counts and training the software, but we're hoping that could kind of speed some of the efficiency and things like that to be able to get the salmon spawner counts to be able to inform managers more quickly. So I just wanted to share some of the things we're trying to explore in addition to the traditional weirs, just faced with, you know, changing budgets, changing erosion and climate conditions. So
budget Money is the big thing right now. Did you find the numbers that you were looking for?
I did not find it, but I'll bring it next time. So
okay.
We were talking about the sibling relationship and the proportion of 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, and other age classes, because, of course, we also get 1-year-olds back. We get 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds. We do get 7-year-olds back still. It's just a much smaller proportion than we used to. So when we are making our forecast from 1 year to the next, and then we're watching that, you know, let's say, so in 2024, we took the run timing data, we took the abundance data, we took the age, sex, length data, which the age is what we get from the scale cards, and then we compare that again to this year. And so this year we'll be looking to see if our 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, and 6-year-olds are the same proportion or are different proportions from what we expect to see year after year. So it's when those things change, that's when it becomes very interesting.
Frightening sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if it's starting to move upward. That would be a sign that things in the ocean are becoming more stable and being a better, healthy environment for the king salmon in the range that they're in. And
I would think if this becomes a point where it's invading our genetics,
where I'm sorry,
that would be really concerning.
I didn't hear that. What was that?
I think if this reaches a point where it's affecting our genetics or showing that our genetics are compromised, that would be a very troubling finding.
Yes.
You know, right now, I think we can speculate that if we've got smaller fish across the age class, it's because they're ranging in an unhealthy ocean.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't think we want to think that our fish are getting smaller just because of genetics making them smaller.
That's correct.
A healthy ocean won't fix that.
There have been some laboratory, of course, because across, you know, parts of Alaska down into Washington, Oregon, Canada, they have hatcheries. And in those hatcheries, they have king salmon, and a lot of times those hatchery fish are restocked with wild genetics. And they've done work looking at how those genes express themselves given different kinds of pressures. And so even when we are looking at a wild 1-year-old king salmon jack, a 1-year ocean fish, you know, what we would call a jack that looks like a trout. Mm-hmm. It looks like, you know, 14 inches, 16 inches long. Tiny.
We surprisingly caught one in the last drift opening.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And
I thought it was a humpy.
Yeah, they do. When they're that small, the scales are so small, they do look like a pink salmon. But those fish, even their genetics, contain the genetics for an 8-year-old fish. The offspring of those fish can come back. So I think that you are correct in assuming that that when we see fish come back earlier, it's because the ocean, whatever conditions are on out there, it's not conducive to the fish staying out there longer.
Right.
Yeah. And we're doing some work to look into that. So we've got our Salmon Ocean Ecology Program. We call it SOAP. S-O-E-P, Salmon Ocean Ecology Program. We've been doing it for about 8 years. The program leads...
What did you say, who's running that study?
Oh, sorry, this is Sam Decker with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. So it's a fish and game project that we started about 8 years ago as part of, you know, understanding that the ocean was a gap in our knowledge and trying to do work to fill that gap. Well, of course, you know, scientific relationships take a long time to develop when we're looking at the data, talking about data relationships. People relationships also take a long time to develop.
No kidding.
But, so we've been working with NOAA on big ships out in the ocean to try and better understand the impact of the first year in the ocean on salmon of all of the different species. We started out with king salmon because that was our particular concern, but then we realized, of course, while we're out there, that we might as well be looking at all of them. And so now we are. And we're looking at the fat content. We have a what we call a fat meter, and it measures the lipids on the fish. So as a way of understanding how much food they have access to, we can, you know, make assumptions based on how much fat they have. Hmm. We look at diseases, genetics, all kinds of different information.
We look at UConn managers shared that real time this year and went on their state website.
Yeah.
You know, findings from that that particular study.
Yep. Yeah, it's a great program. Dina over on the UConn, she's one of the summer season manager there, who I used to work for. We both have gone out on those ships and helped to do the research. And it's a really exciting program because it puts a spotlight on an area that before this had, you know, we had not been able to see before.
Yeah,
Their summary was, we thought this was a big problem, you know, the first year of a salmon spend in the near ocean. And now they're seeing that it isn't perfect, but we can't really say that's the problem anymore. You know, the findings are that those fish are healthy enough that that isn't clobbering their survival rate.
Okay, Jeff.
I'd
like to have Emmett have a say on what we've been hearing. Emmett, chamkaila yukana kuna.
Yeah. I mean, during our last meeting was on the 30th of June, and a lot of the in-season managers have been reporting that there's a good number of reds and the kings have dropped off. And, when I was out on the river yesterday, I was seeing a lot of jumpers and a lot of fish camps with fish hanging and smokehouses smoking. And I think
well,
a lot
I
of
think
the
you
people...
could say those Tulakwana fish, the ones that spawn in Tulakwana Lake, they're real patriots because they seem to really amass and come through our area right around the fort. So this isn't anything new. This is we should expect this to happen.
I thank you, Jeff, for calling in. We have other information that we'd like to get out before our hour is up.
I think a lot of your callers are probably concerned about fishing and fishing tomorrow and
yes.
Those kind of questions.
Uh-huh.
Kind of in-river questions.
We got into the biology of fish more like. Which well, we don't hardly ever get into anyway. You know, it's good to know what's happening. Yeah, mm-hmm. That information to get out. But anyway, Jeff, thank you for your call. I'd like
you're
to.
You're welcome.
Kuyana kwakayaga kulini akunawai nakat kai sun ayu kuchiting bakutu, especially weirs where da kailutig milasheta naknik makun kibri kiluki age group. The sizes of the fish, tamakun kalaksunipuka, kaisun su, kafjin ashakutuluki makutnakta, genetically, nagna winkshit, or kastaitun homakutun, my nasunregiu machinit. Going back to 8 years. Down at toy time chip sukupia clilrita, makutwani pai viscaita, huankuta. Young in now, Luta, you go luta. Sram nasso atokam hongkuta makut nak tanga baga putta like soup soap baka guna kan sa soap. When I see a fish, I see it as soup, you know. But anyway, it's good to know these things. And the more we dig into it, and the more we get into papers, numbers, words, what we don't understand, there's always Webster, my good friend Webster, you know. Now we can Google them.
Mm-hmm.
The information might not be as clear as the dictionary, but they're there. But anyway, in other subjects, what do you have you want to bring out there, Sam?
We do both have a number of new staff as well. So I hope later this summer to bring my new assistant area management biologist in to meet everyone. Her name is Madison Hardwig, she's replacing Dave Runfola, who everybody knows. So ultimately, she will be managing down in the Cusco Bay area. But right now, because she's new to the Kuskokwim, she's helping out all over with sonar, helping to install weirs, doing a bunch of training on different areas. She comes from the Yukon River, where she spent the last couple of years doing a telemetry project. Mm-hmm. And we also have a new telemetry biologist. We're starting a new telemetry project next year.
What is that? Can you break it down?
Yeah, thank you. Telemetry is, it's a way of understanding where the fish go and how fast they move. And we've done this work on king salmon in the Kuskokwim River. And so our plan now is to do it on the chum salmon. And we're hoping in the future to also do it on the coho salmon. So this year, our new biologist, Bailey, is going out to all of the tower sites and hauling batteries, clearing brush, double-checking that the solar panels are intact and working. So folks will see Bailey working all up and down the main stem Kuskokwim from Kwithluk up to Nikolai. All over the tributaries, going to Takatna and George, up into McGrath, all over the place, working on these towers. Next year, people will start to see her flying up and down the river. There are these telemetry towers will ping every time a fish swims by with one of the tags in them. And she'll be working down here just upstream from Bethel with a tagging crew, one boat or two boats that'll be fishing routinely throughout the day, kind of like the Bethel test fish used to. Mm-hmm.
That tagging, that begins in the headwaters where the hats are coming out? Or where do they tag them?
They'll be tagging right down here near Bethel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Actually, we're planning to use the old Bethel test fish site or thereabouts. And they'll be fishing with special kinds of nets, catching the fish, putting them into a live well, putting a radio telemetry tag into them, which will go in their mouth. You'll see an antenna sticking out of their mouth. And then as they swim upstream, the tag that's inside of them will ping off the towers and will start to get information about how fast the fish are swimming and which tributaries they turn up.
Mm.
And the idea is to better understand which tributaries are being used by chum salmon, and to understand the relationship between some of the areas where we have weir counts mm-hmm. and these other areas where we don't know that fish might be going to. And it's a thing that helps us to, you know, as we do every year, when we look at all of our data, we're always trying to update our relationships between our index streams that we do aerial surveys and have weirs on, and all of the rest of the streams across the Kuskokwim drainage. If our index streams are performing well, are doing a good job of representing all of the other streams, then we're happy, and we're confident that our index streams are doing a good job representing the spawning capacity of the rest of the rivers and the tributary. So part of this will do that, confirm that we know where the chum are going. And it'll also help us to understand not just where, but how many chum are using those different streams. And this will be an update to all of our data.
These are the fish going upriver. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they may be finding new areas to spawn. There may be something about the geology or the water that has changed that means that they're no longer using this area. Now they're using this other area. It's a pretty exciting project. And it
be
will
be interesting to, because all we've heard of up to now is the fish go back to where they were born. That's what we've been told. Sam, do you have any? I mean, Tris, sorry, I got you two mixed up. You have anything besides staffing new people? Well, you want to introduce or bring someone here the next opening like she is?
We could try. I think our staff's been pretty consistent. But what I did want to mention, I wanted to go back to what you brought up about the Magnuson-Stevens Act.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And I could talk about it. I know we're running short on time, so I could talk about it at a future show, too. But the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Management and Conservation Act, or MSA, was passed through the U.S. Congress in 1976. And that's what created basically the offshore federal fisheries throughout the United States and in Alaska and Hawaii, even down like in the Gulf, like Puerto Rico, things like that. So it's what set up the 8 regional fishery management councils across the country. The one up in Alaska is the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, and it is responsible for fisheries in federal offshore waters of Alaska, so 3 nautical miles to 200 nautical miles offshore. And then after that 200 nautical mile mark, there's international waters. Mm-hmm. And then more inshore is where Department of Fish and Game manages. So Sam and Madison here on the Kuskokwim. And since 1976, there have been several reauthorizations of this act. This sometimes happens with different pieces of legislation where they need to be updated to address changing circumstances, to correct things. So there hasn't been a reauthorization of the MSA for a number of years. I want to say close to 20 years. And as folks know, things have changed quite dramatically in fisheries with our climate, with our economy across the country. So there's been an effort for a couple years now to reauthorize the Magnuson-Stevens Act to better address climate change, ecosystem change, local fisheries, coastal communities across the U.S., including in Alaska. And I want to say it's a U.S. representative from California named Jared Huffman who's been kind of championing this bill. When Mary Peltola was our representative here in Alaska, she was working closely with Huffman, so I imagine our new representative Nick Begich is also conversing with Representative Huffman because fisheries are so important to Alaska. But I think Congress right now has had their attention on that H.R. 1, the big, beautiful bill. So I don't know. They might have to take this up in their next session. But some things I've heard are trying to be included in this new reauthorized Magnuson-Stevens Act include more research and funding to create climate-resilient and climate-ready fisheries, 2 voting Alaska Native tribal seats on our North Pacific Fishery Management Council. That's something that the tribes have been advocating for a number of years now. And I've heard a little bit about wanting to include a recognition of subsistence fisheries and policy around subsistence fisheries in the Alaska region, because folks here know subsistence policy and fisheries and ways of life are super unique to Alaska compared to the lower 48, other parts of the U.S., and there's a lot of policy inshore, both the federal side and the state side, but not offshore. So I've heard that there's some interest in trying to align that so that there's a more cohesive sort of subsistence fishery framework across our rivers and our oceans in Alaska. So this is in the early stages. I'm sure there's more to come, but mm-hmm. it never hurts to call your representative about anything. So, you know, if folks want more information, they can certainly call us. Happy to get them up to speed.
And for someone like me that depends on salmon for a variety of food and how we use it as a subsistence user, how would this, if it was reestablished and passed, how would that help me?
Yeah, great question. So the MSA has 10 national standards, kind of like the, I've heard them described as like the 10 commandments of federal fishery management. Mm-hmm. National standard 9 is to reduce bycatch to the extent practicable in all federal fisheries off the coast of the U.S. So that's something where we know salmon bycatch is something that affects our fish here in Alaska. It's something that happens in the Bering Sea and the Gulf throughout the year. So the MSA, should it be reauthorized, could have, you know, stronger language, different language around reducing bycatch, preventing bycatch, ensuring that salmon are protected in their migratory corridors. It's kind of one of the avenues for sort of looking at fishery policy to protect, conserve, restore salmon in the ocean. So I'm sure there's more to come as the MSA reauthorization yes. continues forward.
Do you have anything to add to that information from Tris?
Just that it would be very important for subsistence users to raise their voices mm-hmm. around this issue, because mm-hmm. from my time out of the Imonic office up on the Yukon and from my time here, we're constantly hearing about how far offshore subsistence users go mm-hmm. to make harvest. They're, you know, folks from Kotlik go up near Stebbins to harvest mm-hmm. herring eggs on kelp, to harvest crab and cod. Folks here, you know, we were hearing about those folks from Nunavak going 20 miles offshore to go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
That's in federal waters.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be appropriate for this bill to hear from yes. the subsistence users.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I would recommend folks call their tribes to see what efforts are being made in some kind of organized mm-hmm. fashion, because it can feel so overwhelming to try and figure that out on your own.
Oh yeah, we've had folks traveling from here, from Bethel down to the mouth of the Kuskokwim for halibut.
Yeah.
And
it's so shallow out there. Yeah. You've got to go 7 miles uh-huh. offshore just yes. to get into deeper water.
Deeper water mm-hmm. out there.
Yeah.
Beyond those sand
yeah.
land, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I call them, because they don't never seem to go away, even when the tide comes in.
Yeah.
And another question I want to throw out before our time. We have only about 3 minutes left. I heard something about a strike that was going on down in the with trawlers or seiners. I don't know which one it was, but they were on strike, and the caller that made this point pointed out that's why we're catching more salmon in the rivers, because of what has happened out there in the ocean, that they came to a halt due to the price of is mm-hmm. there any data on that, or is there any truth to that?
I don't know. I haven't been able to follow that. I've been so busy trying to install weirs.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything about a trawler strike.
Okay.
I wonder where that might be happening.
It The caller stated it was right here, Bristol Bay, this area down here up by Kipnuck, that area, you know, down there somewhere, out in the bay. But that was the first I've heard of it, and that was the last I've heard of it. So, Emmett, Jamkachali, Umkchuchakhilut, and you guys got 2 minutes left. Closing remarks, Emmett, starting with you.
Okay. I'd just like to mention again our new fish recording line is at 907-543-3151. And to speak with someone at our office, the number is 907-302-5144. And we would also, we also have a Facebook page for the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge. If you guys are interested in getting the latest updates for fisheries, that's all.
Tris?
Just want to say I hope people are able to keep setting nets and catch fish. And a reminder that dip nets are open 24/7, I think, throughout the Kuskokwim. And it's a great way to catch sockeye salmon now that the reds are really coming in good numbers. So hope people can enjoy this weather and keep putting fish away for the winter.
Oh, yeah. Sam?
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be back on Fish Talk. I missed it not being here earlier in the season.
You too.
It's just been a busy year. Yeah. But, yeah, we had over 300,000 sockeye pass the sonar so far, and 42,000 of those came in yesterday. So it is sockeye season. Yes, I'll be getting out this weekend with my dip net too. So good luck to everyone.
Yeah, this was Fish Talk. It happens every Thursday if the sun does not refuse to shine. I hear they got over 1 million fish in Bristol Bay. The count is over 1 million.
Wow.
That's good.
From KYUK 640 AM,